Hello, Eye Drops. Welcome to Sports, the podcast that ends with a question mark but starts with, well, it's Thursday, so it doesn't start with a question, but what it does have is a guest. I'm Katie Nolan. Today's guest, I'm so happy she's here, Rachel Nichols, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo-hoo!
That's her.
Should we just tell everybody?
It's me cheering, but it's you cheering. What? We can tell
I'm
people.
Cheering because I'm here.
Yeah.
That's why I'm cheering. I'm happy I'm here. I do want to tell people our setup, though, because just
well,
so that
I'm sitting on my bed as usual. What's up? Live from the bed with headphones on and not a lot of makeup. Rachel showed up as I knew she would because she had the jump today.
Exactly.
Full hair and makeup, looking like a superstar, drinking something out of a bottle. What is this? Bleep that, Travis. It's not sponsored by She's drinking a beer.
There you go. It's 7 o'clock at night where you are, at least. So yeah. I'm taking the opportunity.
Which means that it's 4 o'clock where you are.
Okay. But my workday starts at 7:30. Okay.
All right. That's a good point.
A.M.
I texted you today at what time? Because I texted you good morning. And then I'm like, it's definitely not morning for her. It was like 11. It was when I woke up.
It's always morning.
It was late.
It's all good.
It's
all
morning until good. We have a beer and then morning finally stops.
I mean, although it's a good morning on the weekend if you can also grab a beer. And so.
Yeah, man. Do you wake up at the same time on the weekends?
God, no. I mean, good. I do right now because I travel a lot and I try to take early flights so I can have a day at home. But yeah, if I can't get the chance to sleep in, I'm still wired for covering sports at night where, you know, I would work until 1 or 2 in the morning and then kind of relax, right, and hang and go to bed at 4 a.m. and then wake up at noon, but I can't.
Yeah, okay, thank you. First of all, thank you for saying that. Normalize waking up at noon when you stay up late at night.
Thank you.
It's a thing that, like, culture seems to be okay with adapting to a lot of people's preferences in a lot of certain ways, but nobody will accept that some people work at night
and
sleep in.
And work better at night.
Oh, my God. I don't feel awake until, like, 4 or 5.
Our first meeting for the jump is at 7:30 in the morning.
What
Pacific
would I
time.
Get done in that meeting? The answer is zero. I would
and
not be able to function.
I have to have read stuff prior to that so that I can talk about sort of anything overnight that happened in the NBA. And like, I got to tell you, I'm not a morning person. So every single morning, we've been doing the show for more than 5 years. Every single morning, I'm unhappy when my alarm goes off. Like every time, I'm not used to it. I'm not happy about it. It's a problem. It's not good. My natural sleep pattern is.
Yes, you have summed up as the child of a bartender who was a bartender herself. You have summed up exactly why I think I've aimed my trajectory towards a late night TV show, because I'm like, I can't do the morning prep. I need the earliest prep to be around noonish. Otherwise, I'm going to be useless. It's not going to be good. If I had to be on TV at 7:30 in the morning.
No, I could never. There was a point, different points in my career where I had different sort of interests from a morning show here or something like that, where it was going to be early. And I was just like, no, I'm not doing that. And I had an agent who was just like, well, yeah, but come on, Rachel, like they want you, you want to go in and talk to them and maybe you leverage it for another offer. And I was just like, I'm never going to work for a morning show. It's never going to happen. I can never do that. So like, there's really no point wasting everyone's time.
That makes me feel so comforted because there have been times, I mean, I think what I've heard from my agents in this short career I've had that feels 30 years long at this point is that they're like, you say no a lot. And I'm like, do I? I thought that I say no because I'm like, not because I don't think it's a great show, but because either I don't think I'm good enough for it or because I'm like, I just know that you won't get good what I'm good for if you have me working a 7 a.m. show. It won't. I'm sorry, but I have to say no for out of respect for you. So to hear you say that you've also drawn lines of just like, it just won't work.
What is one of the first on-air conversations you and I ever had when you were starting Garbage Time, right?
Yeah.
And you said, what's your best advice? I said, the only piece of advice I can give you is just remember, no is a complete sentence.
Yep.
No, period. You don't have to give 17 reasons.
I've repeated this multiple times. That I'm glad you brought that up because I think that interview, I interviewed Rachel. Oh my God, when was that? Is that 20? 2015?
Time is a flat circle. I have again, no idea what time anything is anymore.
2015 sounds like 2 years ago, and it was not. It was many years ago.
You don't know that. 2015 could be 2 years ago. You don't know.
I don't. Who does? Who's to say? Who's in charge of time? There is no time, Lord.
Exactly.
But Rachel was one of my first guests, I want to say, on the Garbage Time podcast. And I think about it constantly. I quote it constantly. I've internalized it to the point where I'm like, this person is a woman I need to keep in my life forever. You gave me so much wisdom and you were so kind. And I've just always felt like the reason I wanted to, you know, tell my audience how much I love you is because you've been a force in my career. And I don't even know if you realize how helpful you've been to me in that you gave me sort of like, hey, here's what it is. Mm-hmm. And if it ever feels like it isn't that, you can call me. Yeah. When we see each other, we can catch up, but we don't like I don't know. You kind of made it a lot easier for me, not just by doing your job as well as you've been doing it, which makes it easier for any woman who comes after you, but just by like saying, hey, you're cool. Everything's fine. Take a deep breath. Call me if you need anything. And I just wanted to make sure I told you, thank you for that. You've been such a wonderful friend and resource for me in my career.
Well, you are cool and everything is fine.
Well, I mean, I meant it cool like you're fine. I'm not that cool. But you know just how not cool I am.
I mean, you're sitting on a bed with a giant microphone and
that's normal size.
That's totally.
That's a normal size
microphone. That is not a normal size
microphone. This is just a regular old microphone. No, that is. I work out of my house now. I'm a person who lives at my home and works at my home. I thought this career was like, I picked one that forces me to leave the house and it just simply has not over the last year of my life. No, but yours has been a little different. Your pandemic experience. Did you have a lockdown point at all at any point, or did you have you been kind of going since?
No. So, you know, we had kind of a weird thing in LA where we saw, you know, we meaning the county in LA County, California, saw what was happening in New York with COVID and how hard New York was hit by COVID right at the very beginning. So they locked down LA County before the COVID rates made that necessary. They were just like, okay,
go figure.
We're going to tell everyone, imagine advanced planning and being concerned about a deadly virus. Mm. So they kind of locked everything down in LA. When that happened, ESPN closed our LA studio. So Bristol was still functioning, but they closed down New York and Los Angeles. And for us at the beginning, they were like, great. We're just going to, it's an emergency. We're going to run SportsCenter like 400 hours a day. Like, we'll see if there's a way we can get your show back on the air at some point. And that felt sort of, first of all, I mean, just this global pandemic was happening, which was super scary and weird and, you know, everything that went along with that first month for all of us. But also it felt like, okay, but there's a lot still happening in the NBA, even though it's shut down. And we all wanted to kind of find a way to continue our show. And it was just nobody at that point, you just didn't know, right? Was LA going to be shut down for a year, 2 years, 3 years? Like, what the hell?
I remember we joked that it was going to be a year, thinking like, it's probably 2 weeks, but imagine if we got a whole year.
Oh, wait, no. And, you know, there's a bunch of stuff moving around, right? They had announced that High Noon was leaving, but then it was like within 2 weeks, everything left. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was sort of like,
wow, the whole schedule shifted. So close to that.
Yeah. Right? Because, and then Pablo, I mean, I can't even imagine Pablo
having a baby.
Who, like, he went to the hospital in the morning. Wasn't it that day that his daughter was born that they announced that High Noon?
No, because I was at the office. I was at the office. It must have been right, like maybe a week or two before.
Okay. All I remember is it was all concurrent. And that then within a week also the world shut down. And I was like, oh my God, Pablo had a baby. And like, everything outside of his apartment will never be the same again.
Exactly.
So I remember thinking that and just thinking for us, hey, we would still like to have a basketball show. So we were trying to figure out ways to do it, even though we could not go into our studio. And just eventually they figured out sort of a new quote from home live technology. And we did that for a while, which was integrating like 6 people from 12 places and all that stuff.
That's gotta be frustrating.
Well, here's the thing. And we were talking about this right before you started recording. There's a whole lot of things I'm not good at. And it turns out that some of those are what's involved in being like a crazy one-man band of a television show. So let's list some of the things I'm not good at. I am not good at being a camera person. Not great at it. Don't have like great artistic vision on exactly where to set the camera and angles and depth perception. And by the way, Rachel, the frame rate isn't working. So can you fix that? No, I can't. I don't know what that means. So there was that. I'm not good at being a sound or audio person. Half the time I sounded like I was coming from a well. I don't know.
We were still kind of do, to be honest.
I still kind of do.
You need a giant microphone. That's what you need.
Team wired headphones, which you and I are proud members of. I will never succumb to the AirPods. So there's that. And as I was recounting, I just said to one of our bosses, you know, hey, did you go to school for makeup? Are you certified in doing makeup? And our boss was like, no. I said, neither was I. It's amazing. I don't know how to do that at a professional level. So that was an adventure.
The time that people spent learning how to do makeup, I spent learning how to do this job. Like the reason I'm sitting here is because I have no idea how to put makeup on my face. I was very singularly focused on becoming good at doing whatever this is.
Yes, yes. And look, it's so funny when you talk about that stuff. There is no one. I've had people I've worked with over time who are sort of like, oh, well, it doesn't really matter what the lighting is. And I'm like, well, it kind of does. And it doesn't matter whatever it is. And I say to them, I am not the one who thinks how I look is important.
Right.
There is nobody more than me who would be thrilled if I could just be the same as my male colleagues and be a woman in my 40s and not have everybody constantly analyzing how I look, having that be something viewers are talking about, having that be something my bosses are talking about.
Sick.
No one would be happier than me for this not to be true. Yeah. But since I don't run the world and it is true, you got to help me out here, people.
Right. It was one of the craziest things when I got to ESPN was finding out that there was no, and this is probably true of a lot of companies. So I'm not just like on ours, that there was no wardrobe department. And I was like, hi, I don't know how to dress myself.
Right.
I only wear graphic t-shirts and jeans because usually I get to work and somebody goes, this is what will look like you know how to dress yourself. And then when I got here, I was like, you want me to wear my own clothes? And so like going into TV studios, that was hard for me. It's actually become easier over the pandemic because I'm like, sick. I can show up in a hoodie and no one can say anything because it's my clothes. I'm in my house. And
it's a global pandemic. There's a crazy virus going
I don't
around.
Have a laundry service pressing my fine shirts. I don't own many fine shirts.
I was going to say, do you own fine shirts?
I have a couple. I think
what
some
qualifies as
fine.
A fine? What does that mean?
They're from, you can only dry clean them. I know that's step one. You cannot wash them yourself. They have to become extra difficult to get clean. Mm-hmm. And they're usually made out of some material that you don't encounter very often in your daily life. Those
Here's
are my two criteria.
Two rules I have for purchases. Three rules. One, nothing that requires dry cleaning.
You don't own any clothing that requires dry cleaning.
I mean, I probably own clothing that the person who made the clothing intends to be dry cleaned, but I don't buy anything I don't think can just go in the laundry.
Every time I've put one of those shirts in the laundry, this dumb t-shirt included, something has happened to it to screw it up that I'm like, oh, if I had gotten it dry cleaned, that wouldn't have happened. Like the seams on the side become front seams and they're all twisted and you're like, what is this?
That could be a look. I also don't own an ironing board. Ooh. I do own, weirdly, an iron, and I kind of made it. I put two and two together the other day. I was like, I own this iron, but I own no ironing board. And then my third thing is that I don't buy anything for my kitchen that can't go in the dishwasher. And again, I'm sure I own pots or something or knives or something that aren't supposed to. But again, I just, my time I feel is more valuable and it will go in the dishwasher. And if I have to replace it in 3 years, I will go buy a new pot at Target, which is where I buy my pots. So it's all good.
Now let me ask, where do you buy your makeup?
Target if I can, if I'm lucky enough, but there aren't that many Targets near me. Big drugstore makeup person. And yes, I mooch from the people who are certified and professionals to do makeup.
I started buying nice makeup as soon as someone put nice makeup on me and said, you don't have to search for it. Just buy this.
Thing. And you're like, okay.
Exact color.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. There you go.
Yeah. So I've missed those people, but so you've been back, you're now in.
So now we're back
studio.
In the studio, right?
Is in studio or are some people still remote?
Again, that's all gone. So we had a period of quote live from home, which is what they called it, but I'm really angry. And our producer, Danny Corrales, was really angry that we could never come up with a clever name. Right. Mm-hmm. So What was highly questionable from home?
Highly quarantined.
Highly quarantined, and PTI was pardon the something.
Oh yeah, what was it?
Something also super clever and smart. Apparently, yeah. Eric Rydholm is brilliant. Well, haha, like we didn't know. Eric Rydholm is brilliant.
Eric Rydholm's good at making TV.
By the way, in case we didn't know for the 8,000th time, Eric Rydholm is brilliant and can think of all this stuff. And we at the jump, it's short. It doesn't fit. It doesn't go with anything. Yeah,
there's no way you can call
we
that.
Didn't, like, nothing
the,
cute.
The stay put. I don't know.
It doesn't have the same ring. So we did that for a while. Then I was in the bubble for the NBA bubble for what felt like 8, 10 years. I don't know how long did the bubble go, 3 months, whatever it was. It felt like 8 years.
I think 8 years was right. 3 months sounds way off.
And then we were in the studio, and we had started to be back in the studio right before that. And then in the studio, and then there was just this weird fluctuation as case rates went up and down of people can be in the studio with you. Oh, wait, no, never mind. No one can ever be in the studio with you. Well, someone can be there if they're 15 feet from you. So we've gone through all of those iterations, but it's funny, you know, I am, this is going to shock you, Katie. I don't want to like tell you some of my personal beliefs here. I believe in science. I know it's crazy. So
Travis,
course,
we'll have to cut this part out. I know, it's right? Controversial.
No, it's a little bit insane. So obviously if you believe in science and doctors and people who have all kinds of training, as opposed to checking Facebook, you know, for all of this time, we have all been very careful. You know, I wear my mask everywhere. I do all the stuff. I carry hand sanitizer with me to the point where it is the only thing I smell like now, which I think is sexy. I think it's totally fine.
It's
and
your
a look.
Musk. It's an interesting it's musk. It's got a little bit of a bite
flavor.
To it.
Yeah, it's not good. My children are not happy about that. Anyway, but now I'm fortunate enough that I was able to get vaccinated. I think most people have been eligible to get vaccinated in this country. They've been open. Vaccination has been open in every state since April 15th. And I'm also psyched that I believe in science now and feel like much more comfortable when I'm in the studio, or we don't have our masks on, obviously, when we're doing TV. And even afterward, if I'm sitting and talking to someone who's vaccinated, guess what? Science is exciting and has allowed us in the face of this like crazy, miserable pandemic to actually like return to our normal lives. So I've been trying to return to my normal life now that I am like my 2 weeks and I'm fully vaccinated and feel like this is cool. This felt like, hey, this was this crazy thing the world has not seen in what, 100 years since the Spanish flu. And we have some pretty amazing smart people in this country who were able to get a handle on it in a way that I think we're all going to be deeply grateful for a long time.
That's always been the thing for me too, is like comfort. Being comfortable being close to people again and not having to worry about it was always my thing. Yeah. I understand there were people that everyone's got different levels of comfort.
Yeah.
My whole thing was like, I can't do my job if everyone around me isn't comfortable. It's a huge, important part of the world functioning. And I don't mean totally comfortable and coddled, but like, it is uncomfortable to be flying in the face of science and hoping you don't get it. And I'll tell you, when I got it, I was worried. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. The hardest part of finding out you have COVID is those first few days where you're like,
no, when you're like, how bad is this going to get?
Gonna go. Like, right. Is this me getting sick and that's frustrating? Or is this me about to die? And
or
even
is
if you don't
feel
that.
My whole life never going to be the same again.
Exactly.
Like, I and don't like, die, but I will always have this extra.
I read a bunch of articles that would always say like people's experiences were like, yeah, I would feel fine during the day and awful at night. Or every time I felt like I turned a corner, it got worse.
It didn't. Right. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so every time I felt like I turned a corner, I was like, do not get your hopes up. This thing might come right back and punch you in the face, which it did a couple of times, but luckily it wasn't that bad. But it just felt like a lot of people's responses to this were so like, I'm fine. So why does everybody else care?
Right.
It's like, well, cause not everybody else is fine. And that's it. I think it should just be like, you believe in what you believe, but don't put other people in danger.
It's also been, look, you know, we can say, hey, the statistics are, and Katie, it sounds like you feel totally normal now, right? And you are just so young and healthy. And
I mean, I feel depressed
oyster.
As hell, Rachel, for being honest. But I don't think that has anything
to do with it. But I don't think that's COVID related.
No, those are my chemicals.
There are plenty of people who are young and healthy and not. And I cover the NBA. And right now on the Boston Celtics, you have Jason Tatum, who had COVID in early January. And it's April. Now it's May. It's May. And he's still using, I know, which is, again, time
I gotta
is a
send my
circle.
Mom a Mother's Day gift.
No idea. Do you though? Okay. It's May and he has to use an inhaler before every game because he was just having so much trouble getting up and down
the court. And it's a guy
whose
career we're seeing like take off. He's clearly got this potential.
He scored 60 points the other night. Like, it's not like when people, and then I heard, you know, it's funny. Jason Tatum is held up as someone who has had long-term problems from COVID because he has.
Yes.
And then you see people on the internet who are sort of those deniers be like, well, he just scored 60 the other night. I guess he's fine. And yeah, he did. And that's incredible. But he had to use an inhaler.
He had to do it with the help of an
inhaler.
Yeah, he never had to do
that
before.
That he never had before. And his teammate on the Celtics now, Evan Fournier, which, by the way, If I can leave you with one thing, last time we did this, it was Noah's a complete sentence.
Yep.
This time it's do not ever Google Evan Fournier's last name. Ever.
Why?
Just trust me. Just
okay.
In our
you
friendship.
You know I'm going to do it. You know
in
I'm
our
gonna
friendship,
do it.
Just know, have I ever given you bad advice?
Never. Genuinely, no.
So there you go. I'm just telling all your listeners out there, don't ever Google Evan Fournier's last name. Evan Fournier, the player, you will probably end up with his stats. That's fine. But just Fournier. Don't do it. You don't want to do it. And you certainly don't want to Google image search. I'm just saying.
Jeez Louise.
Anyway, what I will tell you, though, is that he's traded to the Celtics. This is a guy who's played in Orlando, not a team that has had great postseason success.
Yeah.
He goes to the Celtics, a team that has been in the Eastern Conference Finals 3 of the last 4 years. He's like, oh, my God, this is the break I've been waiting for. He gets coronavirus. And he said that even though he has been, quote, recovered and now is testing negative and is allowed to rejoin the team, he said he feels like he has a concussion all the time.
Whoa.
And he's 28 years old and a professional athlete in very good shape. So, again, everybody is different. To your point, you recovered great, wonderful. But I'm, again, yay science. And I'm glad that less people have to deal with that now with vaccinations. I am curious to see the relationship between vaccines and players. Because I don't know if this comes up in some of the other sports that you talk about on this lovely pod and other things, but
yeah, definitely not on this pod, but maybe other things.
The things. So we're about to go into the playoffs in the NBA.
Yeah.
And for example, Dennis Schroeder and the Lakers here in Los Angeles, where I live, just was sidelined for, quote, COVID protocols. And they said he'll be out for 10 to 14 days. Now, there's a private matter. We don't know for sure if he has COVID, but here's the difference. In the NBA, if you are sidelined for contact tracing, you are out 7 days. Whereas if it is a positive COVID test, you are out 10 to 14. So we can all do math and understand what
well,
has
not
probably
all
happened
us, but
there.
We try our best.
We try. given the 10 to 14 days, that is typically what they say when someone actually has coronavirus. And the Lakers are in trouble, right? LeBron James isn't playing for the next couple of nights. AD is still getting himself back. And Dennis Schroeder is their starting point guard. And they're trying to stay out of the play-in tournament, which is, you know,
because LeBron hates it and wants that guy fired.
I feel so bad for him. Anyway, for Evan, not, I mean, the guy who came up with the play-in tournament. Anyway, but that you know, this is a key time. And if you're a member of the Lakers or there's several, I'm not just singling out Dennis Schroeder, by the way, there's several other players who've been sidelined with COVID in the last couple of weeks. The league announced 4 positive tests this week for NBA players. If you're one of the teams that one of those 4 players is on, I'm curious, in the locker room, as much as guys are like, hey, everybody's entitled to their personal decision, do you think there's a little pressure of like, well, dude, why didn't you just get vaccinated?
I could see it, but I could also, so let me ask you this. Do you feel like there's always this weird people misuse HIPAA?
I'm not saying
HIPAA.
There should be, by the
no,
way.
No, totally.
I'm not saying there should be. I'm asked, like, it's a situation we haven't come across yet because we're familiar with the dynamic of like, okay, your ankle hurts, but you can play on it, right? It's the playoffs.
We cheer on the guys. Like when Clay came back out, we cheer for playing through injuries.
Ronnie Lott feels cut like a off thing, his finger.
I mean, and that is
to play football.
That's
because
a little, and for me, I'm going to say that's a little much. I'm going to say that I'm allowed to have my own line and that crosses it.
So you want to keep all 10 of your fingers?
Yeah.
You got
look,
10,
I'm
Katie.
A person,
can't you do things with 9?
I don't know. What finger was it? Was
it?
It
was
pinky?
A pinky.
Yeah, I guess I really could do without a pinky. I don't mean to disrespect that part of my hand,
if ESPN
but I don't
needed
think
you,
about it.
If ESPN needed you, maybe not.
No, if ESPN needed me, I think I'd keep my hand just for personal reasons. I don't know.
So
there's this weird thing with athletes and medicine that, you know, people with the, I want to say it was like the JP stuff was people who were like, it's a HIPAA violation for us to know. And it's like, that's not true. A HIPAA violation is, I think, when a doctor tells somebody else. It's not when somebody reports on medical information they've received from somewhere.
Right.
But it it is a little bit weird to think of the flip side where you're like a basketball team would require somebody to take a medical thing that maybe they don't feel comfortable with for whatever reason.
And they're
But then you think about schools. I always had to get vaccines to go to school. And it was never this like, you're violating my freedom. It was like, man, I hate needles. I don't want to, but I will. Right.
Yeah, because I'd like to attend kindergarten. And by the way, the NBA is not telling anyone they have to get vaccinated. No. I am not telling anyone they have to get vaccinated. I am just curious. It's just if you watch sports long enough, you're familiar with the paradigm of athletes who feel this push and pull of these teams ask me to literally bleed for them because that absolutely happens. And yet I could get traded tomorrow or this, that, and the other. But then again, you're getting something out of playing hurt. If you win a title, like that actually is a personal achievement and something that you might monetarily benefit from. So it's just an interesting to me, like of all the new things that COVID has brought us, let's say Ronnie Lott is at one end of the spectrum. and maybe the other end of the spectrum is, my ankle feels, I'm feeling a little peakish, but I'll go out and play. Where does, hey, dude, looking across the locker room, why didn't you get vaccinated? Because now we can't have you for a couple weeks or maybe more, because as we just were discussing with Jason Tatum or Evan Fournier, never Google, that, it could last weeks or months longer, right? I'm not making a decree. I just think it's a super interesting question to me that I am now like seeing at work when we are so close to the playoffs. And now about to get into the playoffs. And again, 4 new cases in the NBA this week. And at this point, vaccines have been available to all of these guys on these teams for about a month. And you just wonder if there will be a point where in the locker room, there is pressure between players of like, come on, dude, like, how did this happen?
Yeah. What's going on? Where do you stand currently on Kyrie? Because when the Kyrie thing happened with like the bubble, when he came out and was like, I think we shouldn't go, people really jumped on him. And look, I'm a person who covers basketball in the way that I cover most sports, which is like, I freely admit what I know and don't know.
Yeah.
I listen and participate and whatever, but I try to listen more than participate because I don't really know anything about basketball. But it was surprising to me to watch.
I wouldn't say you don't know anything about basketball personally. I've heard you listen. I've listened to you talk about basketball, but continue.
It behooves me to be like, listen to me on basketball, kids. But it did seem strange to me the way everybody was so against what Kyrie was saying. And part of it to me is like, sports fans always think that shut up and play.
Yeah.
You get paid a ton of money to play a game. I would kill to be you. I wish I could be you. I have to work a job, support my family, and you can just go out there and play basketball. So shut up and play.
Mm-hmm.
But it also just felt like a lot of people were more willing to jump on him because he has said things that aren't, aren't widely held beliefs, like that the earth is flat. And that's me tiptoeing around something that I really wish I didn't have to tiptoe around. But like, I guess maybe I'm more willing to understand that that any quest for knowledge is a journey and that it starts in certain places. But as long as you encourage people along, a path that they can actually reach the enlightenment I think they seek, and watching him misstep doesn't to me mean I have to write him off. It means that like, okay, let's make sure he's. And so when he started talking about not going to the bubble because of social justice, part of me was like, well, are you invalidating his ideas because you disagree with them? Or are you invalidating them because you think he thinks the earth is flat? Because those two things really don't have anything to do with each other. And it just felt like he got demonized. I'm realizing now I asked you a question and I'm answering it myself. So
I like you answering it though.
Where do you stand on Kyrie?
Well, first of all, I happen to like Kyrie personally. I think he's interesting. I think he's smart. I think he looks at the world very differently than a lot of the other people I encounter in basketball. So I appreciate that, right? It's nice to talk to someone who sees things a little bit differently. It doesn't mean that I agree with everything he thinks or everything he's done, but that's okay. I don't have to agree with everything everyone has done in every situation. I think in that case,
every situation, please.
And in the particular case you are talking about, I was surprised at the pushback of him only because this idea that there was only one way people should think about a global pandemic that has literally not like happened the likes of which in a century, intersecting with a professional sporting event that was never around in the 1800s in the Spanish flu or the 1900s or whatever it was, 1918. There's now the history people are going to go after me.
I don't know.
I'm just saying, again, time, flat circle. But
just like Earth. Oh God, sorry, I had to.
So, God. What happens when you get to the edge? I always want to know that from people with that. I know, right? What happens at the edge? And Kyrie, by the way, I will just say this also about Kyrie. He has come out and apologized for the
Well, no one's ever going to listen to him because it's a perfect punchline.
Anyway, but yeah, I think in general, like this idea that there's one way to think, I hate to be like, oh, these crazy kids, I blame the internet, but there is just a complete correlation between the rise of internet culture and message boards and kind of having to stake out more and more of a crazy take and claim. There's no middle anymore. There's no nuance. You know this, you are online. And like, there's no, you know, either someone's like wrong and an idiot and I can't believe they thought that and you hate my team, or, oh my God, everything is right and how could you disagree with them and such and such. And, you know, I see it every year when we talk about MVP in the NBA, like it is crazy to hear from these fans where if you mention one guy is just being like, hey, I think he's in the conversation. It's interesting. The season isn't over yet. We'll see how this goes. How could you say that? You don't know that so-and-so is the MVP and that is right next to someone else's comment. How could you say that? Don't you know that this other person is the MVP? Ugh. And there's just a constant. So that's a stupid, silly sports argument. But of course, either that's the discourse or it's not. And then that becomes the discourse for, how could you say that? You don't think they should go to the bubble? Like, it's all the same conversation. It's just about different things. So I think Kyrie ran into that. It turns out he didn't go to the bubble, but other people did. And I, as someone who was in the bubble, will tell you that I wish I could have gotten a pizza more consistently. That really sucked. There was no real sushi. That was a problem. But other than that, I was like pretty psyched that the NBA did it. I thought it was actually pretty impressive thing that they pulled off. Like the number of people who had to work their asses off, and like, you know, we talk about like, oh, working into the night, into the morning. There was no days off. It was just boom, 24 hours, seven days a week, whatever. And I'm talking about hundreds of people who weren't the stars on the basketball court, but who just had to do the intense, crazy sanitizing and cleaning and organizing. The guys in the like poor mailroom. I mean, the mailroom operation in the bubble, I cannot even explain to you. They had to hose everything down because at that point there was still a real concern. So every
package came in. I remember that. I remember wiping down Amazon boxes.
Right. They had the sprayer where they would like hose everything down. Then there were huge like pallets of where each team had stuff to come in, because when you have a bubble that you are literally not letting anyone in or out, you can't get, say, a pizza delivery. So like I wanted a pizza because I wanted a pizza, Katie. I have been stuck in a bubble for X number of weeks.
You deserve
it. You can't just call and be like, hey, can you deliver me a pizza? Because the pizza guy can't come in and the box can't come in. So like finally, we have a producer, Melinda Adams, who like negotiated to get a pizza. Cassidy Hubbarth was like kind enough. I mean, she's, God bless her, sent us Chicago pizza that's frozen, right? So she had to ship us pizza.
Oh my God.
That pizza had to be heated up in an oven that wasn't in the bubble. It was in the outer bubble because the pizza might not have been sanitary. It's a pizza in a frozen container, but they were worried it could have coronavirus germs. So it had to come into an oven in a non-sanitary, quote, like bubble kitchen, get baked, in which case then it became, quote, sanitary, put in a box. Like 45 minutes later, after coming out of the oven, got to us where like, we were like, great, cold pizza. And then I was like, hey, can I get a pizza cutter? And the guy looked at me, goes, well, that's not sanitary.
Jeez,
I was
like, Louise, did you fold it and eat it like a taco?
Well, it was a deep dish Chicago pizza.
Oh God,
so you can't fold that.
So
I had a plastic knife trying to like saw through like the sweetest person in the world, Cassidy, like sending us pizza.
Is the sweetest person in the world. Right? I just want to confirm. We were just talking about that before, Travis and I. She's the kindest, sweetest.
She is like the nicest human. With another of the nicest human in the people in the world, our producer Melinda Adams, who arranged for this crazy pizza ballet of four different hotels to warm up pizza. Like these poor people who worked in the mailroom. So that was me and one pizza and four people working on the pizza problem.
My God.
These guys in the mailroom, anytime a team wanted something, and you know, NBA players or any professional athlete, they're like, I would like a pinball machine. And the pinball machine had to be sourced, couldn't be delivered, had to be shipped in,
exhausted.
Through the wiping down process, the whole nine. I will say though, it was pretty funny to hear what was going through the mailroom, like what the players wanted. Someone ordered a couch. I was like, dude, the hotel has couches.
Oh, what? I mean, you've got to very specifically, I've been rocking with a couch I can't stand for like 7 years just because like moving a couch is that annoying.
Into a hotel room.
I mean, that's.
Someone ordered a refrigerator.
This is like a blind item.
Right? Blind item in the New York Post. Someone ordered a refrigerator and the guys in the mailroom were like, oh, well, you know, we've got a refrigerator that was just delivered. And I was like, yeah, like a mini fridge. I get that. People want like a fridge in the room. And he was like, no, Rachel, a refrigerator with like a freezer and the water
maker. Like an ice machine. Oh my God. Can you even, you can't just wheel that up and plug that in. Don't you have to, can you just plug that in? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know, but I'll tell you, it's probably harder to get than a pizza. I don't know. So yes. So Kyrie didn't go to the bubble. Some of us did. I'm very impressed by the bubble. Not only did all those people do all of those things, they didn't have a single case of coronavirus among a single player, despite like, you know, all of the effort and all of the stuff.
Well, I mean, now it makes sense. You couldn't even get a pizza.
Can't even
if
get
anybody
a pizza.
Got coronavirus, it'd be like, how did you even do it? Tell us how you did it. It'd be like robbing a bank.
Did it involve a pizza cutter? Because
how
can
did
I borrow
you
that?
Sneak it in here? And can I have the pizza while this little hole in the bubble is open?
Yes, exactly.
Oh God, if anyone got diagnosed, you'd be like, cool. While we're here, I need three pizzas. I need a pizza cutter.
Exactly. It's not too much to ask.
Quick, before it closes.
I know.
It was very fun? Very sad. Did you have fun? I know you had one particularly not fun moment, but was it fun?
Yeah. No, overall, yes. And look, it was crazy. It's like a lot of things we do right at work. Like some of it's hard and some of it makes you like was difficult. I definitely had phone calls home where I was like, I don't like this. I don't want to be here. This is really hard. And then those moments pass and you're like, okay, all right. And then some things happen that are extraordinary. And you know, you're one of the few people who got to be in the room to see it.
Yeah.
And that to me made the hard stuff worthwhile, like legitimately worthwhile. And I will say that, you know, I am not a, you've never seen on my Instagram some like inspirational saying. I am not a like fluffy bunnies and like just hang in there cat person.
You're tough. I get it. Tough as nails.
I'm not very nice. So
I completely disagree. But that's because people have told me I'm not nice. So maybe we're just both meanies who like each other.
Yeah. But no, that being in the bubble was part of a larger experience through the pandemic of finding more gratitude in a way that didn't feel to me like it was part of like some yoga teacher's lecture or that like some like thing on a poster or a notebook or like your gratitude journal, which by the way, I'm sure really actually helps people and is not something I am in any way making fun of. I'm just saying I couldn't relate to it for a long time.
Right.
Like I wasn't able to kind of connect to, I think I just felt like, oh, my life is so busy. Like, yes, of course I'm grateful for stuff. Like, yes, I know I'm fortunate. Like, yeah, of course, everybody, you know, who's lucky enough to be in a good situation knows that. Yeah. And I didn't think there was sort of a deeper level of that, but whether it was being in the bubble and kind of having that experience of, yes, I can't be around some of the things that I'm used to or want, like my family, being away from my kids for that long was really like really hard. And then also I'm safe here. And that is a whole different kind of like, oh, so for a few months, like I don't have to worry about what the rest of the world is worrying about. I am in a actual bubble. Like I am completely safe in here. Like I get to see things, you know, I love basketball and I love sports and I have stuck with it through all kinds of things that, you know, might've turned me away. Mm-hmm. And to get to be in a place where something like literally once in a lifetime, hopefully knock on everything was happening. You know, certainly once in my lifetime, and I've covered sports for a long time. I've been in this for now for about 25 years and I've never seen anything like
really?
That. I'm very old, Katie.
No, you're not. That. Shut up. You're not old. Cause I realize that when I interact with you, I don't ever think about how old you are. I assume you're, I talk to you like you're my age.
Yeah.
And so today I was like, I actually don't know how old Rachel is. And I Googled you. I'm like, yeah, you're not like, old. You're not old.
So, I mean, first of all, I'm the joke of, oh, I started very young. I did actually start very young.
Yeah,
so
you did.
I was working at USA Today when I was 17 as like an intern and stringer. And then I like went from there. But that being said, still, you have to then fast forward 25 years and I am now very old. I've never seen anything like this. And so I could be simultaneously like legitimately grateful in a way that has stuck with me. Like since that whole experience and the whole experience of the pandemic that has felt like, okay, there is stuff that sucks. There is still stuff that sucks. There's stuff that sucks in our job. There's stuff that sucks in life. There's stuff that sucks in society. And that doesn't make any of those, I'm not trying to make any of those things not awful, and being upset about them is completely valid. But I think I have been able to finally tap into like the yoga master zen that other people were able to tap into a long time ago, and feel a little bit more like, okay, like I woke up this morning, it was beautiful out. I took a deep breath of like, I have food, I have clothes, I have two awesome kids. I love, like, have a job. I really dig, even though, like, again, nothing is perfect. That's good. That's good for today. And that this whole experience and the bubble in particular sort of helped me to that point in a way that maybe I wouldn't have had before.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, or maybe I should say, I hope a lot of people have had similar experiences from this pandemic. Obviously we're not saying it's a good thing that this happened.
No,
it's more like a, this thing happened, what good can you take from it? And I think for me, at least, what the thing that was striking to me, it's very much in line with what you said, though I didn't go to a bubble, was that like, I've been running for so long that when people would say, be grateful, be grateful, be grateful. It was like, okay.
Yeah, I am. Of course. Yes.
I like very everything grateful. I have. Very I lucky, never, yes. Don't complain about the things I have. I love them. But this, when I had to stop, because it was like when you were being told that your show, we're going to try to find a way to bring your show back. Mine was like, you guys can do it online if you want, but your season is basically over. So I was kind of like, okay, show's over.
Right.
They're not going to bring that back.
Yes.
So like what for a while I was kind of just spinning. I was like, well, when, what do we do next? What do we do next? And then all these things kept happening to me until I broke down. Like they would, my staff was getting moved around or fired. Right. And then, you know, they laid Ashley off and I was just like, blah, I like broke of like, what, why does this all keep happening? And then I realized like, I can't control any of that. Stop for a second. And I think it was the first time I've been able to look down. I don't mean that like condescend. I mean like look down
at your feet.
Where am I?
Right.
Did I got all the way here.
Yeah.
Very quickly and like recognize how where you got to be super grateful for it. And it was all of a sudden like, oh my God, a few years ago, I was making YouTube videos in like an apartment that was underground and had bugs. And like, I was working and then going to bartend and then getting 4 hours of sleep. Like, and I'm here now. I work at ESPN. Like, this is awesome. And so it was like this first moment where I could stop and all that yoga-y stuff that people were able to connect with before that. I was like, that seems super corny. Suddenly I was like, the world is, everything does happen for reasons. That doesn't mean that everything happens because it's a good thing to happen. It means it has a purpose and you need to use that to go to wherever you're going. It's all a part of your journey. And I was like, whoa, I never thought these are things I was going to be saying,
exactly.
But here I am. And so I'm hopeful that a lot of people, and I know a lot of people had to work essential jobs and didn't really get to stop. Their life didn't get a breather. It got much harder and harder. Much heavier, very
and dangerous.
Yeah. And hopefully, I hope that anybody who is, you know, working in the medical industry, once this thing is figured out and under control, that they take the longest vacation and just like lock themselves in silence and think about things and feel their feelings. Because like of all the, with all the bad that came with this pandemic, I think the good of it for me was I had time to feel stuff and think things instead of like, what's next? Where are we going? What are we doing?
Yep. Absolutely.
So I'm super grateful for that. But it also leads me to a question I want to ask you that I might not have asked you before.
Okay.
So you started your career, you were young. You worked in Florida, right, for a while?
After college, So I went to Northwestern for college. I had done like
one of those internships smart
and half whatever. Well, you know, it's a league. We're all in, me and Wilbon and Adonde and all those people together. We had
Darren
meetings.
Revelle. Don't forget Darren
Revelle.
We have
Revelle. Handshakes. We have all kinds of things. but I had kind of been a stringer for, I was going to be a newspaper writer, right? I grew up in Washington, D.C. and I wanted to be, I read All the President's Men like 8 times. And
really?
I was such a like little like nerd for the Washington Post. I was like, all I want one day is to work for the Washington Post.
Why? What was it about it?
Well, first of all, I grew up in the DC area and it was really, really good. It was an incredible sports section. It is how I fell in love with sports through that newspaper. And it was through Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon, who were the two lead columnists there. It was through Christine Brennan, who was the NFL reporter. She's the first woman to ever have an NFL pro beat. And what was funny, and I always say this about Christine, another Northwestern graduate, that she is why I wanted to go to that school, is that I grew up as a kid reading her writing about the football team. And to me, it just was like, yeah, she's the writer for the football team. I didn't know. I was a kid. I was just like, yeah, right? So it was only later that I found out that that was A, unusual, that she had been the first one to be like a regular NFL beat writer as a woman. And that, like, I was like, it's too late. It's too late to tell me that I can't do this.
Yeah.
Because I've already been watching her do it.
It's almost as if representation matters.
It's weird like that. Gosh, yeah, darn it.
That's so funny.
So I'd fallen in love with sports through these people, Mike and Tony and Tom Boswell and Sally Jenkins and Christine Brennan. And I sort of was like, one day, maybe I'll get there. And I had been an intern there in college, and I was a stringer for them when I went back to Chicago, which was crazy because, again, I was a child, and yet I was in the Chicago Bulls locker room covering Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen.
Who and who?
19 years old with my little notebook, terrified because I was, you know, young and female, which was two things that was not super normal there. I went the first like four times I like didn't speak. I just took notes on what other people's like questions, answers. And like the fourth time Michael Jordan turned to me and was like, you, he was like, do you talk? Oh, and I was like,
oh my God. And I took that personally.
Right. I was just like, yes, I talk sometimes, but I'm 19 and you're very scary. So I was doing all that stuff and I was getting ready to graduate, and I literally drew a line across a map and I said, I'm applying for jobs underneath this line, because I had been in Chicago for four years and I love Northwestern. I love the school. I love Chicago as a city. I could not handle it. I'm not tough enough. I'm sorry.
It's cold.
It's not the cold. It's dark, Katie. It is. Have you lived in the Midwest ever?
No, I have not. Okay. I've only lived in Boston, New York, New Jersey. I'm very East Coast, and it's predominant.
Very dark a lot of the time. In the winter, it gets dark at like 4 o'clock.
Why?
And then even when it's not. Well, okay. I mean, this is so
time
nerdy.
Zones. Brain going. I think you know this one, but try to figure it out.
Well, no. So Chicago, if you look at a map, not everybody realizes this. So I'm happy to educate the listeners.
If you asked me to put it on a map, I wouldn't. I would try my best. I'm Chicago's very dumb at geography, and I'm not hiding it anymore. I don't know where things are.
Well, let me help. Let me educate. So Chicago, if you look at a map, they kind of make a turn around the time zone to kind of scoop Chicago into.
Why
the
Midwest do that? That's not
zone.
How that should work.
Because it was the farm market and the meat market and all the products and produce and things coming from farms coming up the railroad lines to Chicago, where they had this giant meat market. They wanted Chicago on the same time zone as the crops and suppliers and farmers who were bringing them their products. So everybody
makes
would be doing
sense,
deals.
I guess.
Makes sense, except Chicago should probably be in the Eastern time zone. So it's getting dark at 4 when it should actually be 5. And then even during the winter, when it's before 4 o'clock, it can be just gray with no sunlight for 10, 12 days in a row, maybe 14 days, maybe a month. So there are people who are tough enough to handle it. I'm not one of those people. And I literally went and got a job in Florida.
I mean, the opposite of that.
Because I was like, there has to be a place where I'm not cold and dark all the time.
Did your hair like Florida? Because mine hates it.
So I made so many mistakes. And one of them was, I was like, I'm going to be dark and exotic now because I got a tan. And I was like, I'm dyeing my hair black.
You did not.
I totally did. It was not good. God. It was nothing about it was good. It wasn't good. I looked like.
I did it in college, but it's not as far of a leap for me because my hair is just a boring brown anyway.
Dude, I thought I would look like cool and mysterious. And instead I looked like, I don't know, like Sabrina, the Teenage Witch trying to go goth.
Definitely look
like
cool.
It was,
I'm going to find a picture. Does it exist on the internet?
No, see, again, I'm old. So back then there was not a lot of, there's no
That's
like,
not
you know, there's
fair.
No Twitter, there's no Instagram.
Every mistake I've made is on the internet.
I know. I did love living there. I learned about like Florida man and like all of that culture because it's all true. And I think I'm going to get the details wrong. So please don't write me on the internet. The mayor of Miami either was in jail while he was the mayor while I was down
that
there,
sounds right.
Or like was just taken away from being the mayor to go to jail. I'm getting the details wrong, but it was like right all of that stuff was happening.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a lot at first. And then I got to go to the Washington Post as my next job.
I mean,
job.
A dream come true.
A dream come true. And then it turns out like newspapers completely collapsed as an industry. Right. And
I was going to say, why did you leave and go to ESPN? But I guess.
Well, yeah. And you know, now obviously a lot of great newspapers have figured out the internet, but at that point they hadn't. And it just felt like, hey, if I want to keep going in my career, this was something. And again, I also had Mike and Tony and a bunch of people at ESPN were going to, I mean, a bunch of people at the Washington Post were going to ESPN. So I will say about PTI though. So my little cubicle at the Washington Post, which is what I had, was literally right between where Mike Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser's nice fancy offices were.
My goodness. And they would come out of to yell at each other.
Well, no, they did not even bother to do that. The doors would just be open. I was going to say, you've met both of them.
No, yeah, you're right. That makes sense.
You know that's not true.
Through the wall, or did they call each other?
Well, no, the offices had like the glass, you know, like the whole third, fourth wall was glass, right?
Yeah.
And then the door would be open. So the doors were open and they could hear each other from their desks and you could kind of see them because they were glass and they would just start yelling at each other and arguing about something. And I would literally have to leave the office to get work done. Yeah, I would be like, I need to write. It's hard to write a story when people are like arguing next to you in your ear. And so when they finally like did the pilot for PTI, I was so thrilled because I was like, great, go there, go to the studio and argue because I need to write a Washington Capitol story, which is what I was doing.
So then you went to ESPN, obviously, and then you went to CNN for a little, and then you came back to ESPN. I don't want to gloss over that because some of my favorite stuff of yours was when you were at CNN. Like were you at CNN for the Goodell thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that moment was so, like, if there's ever a story written about this time of our lives, that moment goes in it. I know tons of women who like stood up and felt proud of themselves when you pushed back on Goodell in that press conference. And the other thing that stands out for me, I remember sitting in my apartment in Jersey City, watching you do a monologue about Floyd Mayweather and being
like,
we
had him on for an interview.
That's what it was. And you pushed him. You pushed back on him. You were like, you pled guilty, so you can't say this now. It was remarkable. I mean, you are remarkable at your job. You have this confidence that I completely lack, am currently working on, I guess. But the thing of mine that blew up about in regards to Ray Rice was that I said I was in a room with Goodell and I didn't have the balls to ask the question because I thought somebody would call out my credentials and be like, why do you even get to be in this room?
Right.
And so I effectively silenced myself. And then I watched you not silence yourself. And I think something clicked for me that was like, oh, you just have to kind of do it, huh?
Nothing is easy, right? But to me, it is easier to be brave about stuff that just boils down to not being, it's not hard. Don't hit women, don't beat children. Like, it's just, like to me, when we get into that stuff, it's not nuanced. I'm sorry, it's not. Like problems are nuanced, situations are nuanced. There's never a time where that stuff's okay. There's never, well, because she said this or she did that, or, oh, don't you understand about this or whatever. It's not okay. And so to me, whether it was Floyd Mayweather or Roger Goodell, I think that was part of a time in America where we kind of started to, as a culture, stand up and say, actually, no. You don't get to, in Floyd Mayweather's case, his son wrote this heartbreaking, it is on the internet. Don't Google Evan Fournier, but Google this because it is worth looking at, a heartbreaking letter about his father beating his mother that he wrote for the court case and for the police. And like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be ashamed or upset or scared to ask someone a question about that because it's just wrong. And that's kind of where, when I have to ask hard things, it feels to me like I get some of the nerve or whatever it's called, because it just feels like, well, okay, to me, this feels not negotiable.
Yeah. It's sort of like once you force yourself to read that stuff, once you force yourself to dive in on it, it becomes like a, well, I'm not going to not. Like, I can't not. The fear is that it's like there's something you don't know. I remember when I remember not knowing anything about Floyd Mayweather, not knowing anything about TV, doing an episode of Crowd Goes Wild. We had Floyd Mayweather as a guest. I palled up with him, posted a picture on my Instagram, and everybody was like, what are you doing? And right. I was like, what do you mean? What am I doing? Oh my God, I didn't know.
Right.
And so then I looked everything up and being like, oh my God, what was I doing?
But that's okay too.
That you don't know. Right. And once yeah. you know, it's like, now I know what I want right. to say. Cause now,
but
I know.
I don't think anyone in the media or anyone in their life has to be like the steward of all things. Right. It's okay not to know. It's okay to come out afterward and say, actually, I didn't know that. And now I know, and I would do it differently. And I also think, by the way, the flip side for anyone we're talking about, and that includes the Floyd Mayweathers of the world, if you decide to actually have contrition and grow and change, it is my opinion that there is room for that. Now, Floyd yeah. Mayweather has largely not done that.
At all, so, I would say.
So, you know, I'm not saying that he falls into this category right now, but I have also had people come at me and sort of be like, well, you were upset with Floyd Mayweather, or you questioned Roger Goodell, but how could you talk to so-and-so? And my answer is always like, well, because stories don't end. Life's not like that. There's
That's
no like end credits. There's no like, okay, this is it. The book's closed on this person. The credits rolled. That's it. They go away. They go in a little box forever. Like life continues. I hope that we all have the chance to like get better after we up, because I haven't made Floyd Mayweather beating my child mistakes, but I have made other kinds of mistakes. And like, you just, if we don't allow people room to get better, what the hell are we doing?
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
what are you hoping for?
It out? What are they going to do?
Right. What
they're
are you hoping
move
for?
Away. They're not, you can't, right. you don't want to hope for somebody to not be in
like,
society.
They're not the Wicked Witch of the West. You're not yeah. going to like pour water on them. And they're like, what are we hoping for? Whether it is like a hardened criminal, like that we then gets after serving his or her time, gets out of jail. Like the hope is that there is an opportunity to grow and change as a person and become a force for good in the world. And maybe because of what you have done wrong, not what you've gone through, but what you have done wrong.
Yep.
That you have an even deeper understanding. We have an
Mike
interview.
Tyson. I use this example a lot. Listening yes. to Mike Tyson talk now, I'm like, man, you are smarter because of mistakes you've made. Right. I wish you hadn't made them. But
yes.
since we can't go back and change the fact that you've made them, yep. This is what I would have hoped for, is that
for
now you can be somebody who speaks on things in a way that's like, you have a deeper understanding. You have something valuable to add. Not to say he's mm-hmm. never going to make another mistake.
No, nope.
Not to say, you know, but it's just like a, yeah, there's that moment where you're like, you've demonstrated to me. That's the issue for me with sports mm-hmm. is everybody comes with the second chances way too quickly.
Well,
I think
yeah.
that the, you know, because of all the things we talked about before, the way sports mm-hmm. fans are, the way that the conversation has always happened in this space,
mm-hmm.
the conversation is like, move on from it. Stop
yeah,
bringing
sure.
that into sports. And it's like, excuse me, I mm-hmm. didn't bring it into sports.
Right.
The person who did it and then did sports brought it into sports. And so you're now just ignoring that it's here. And
right.
I'm saying, let's make sure this person knows they made a mistake so they don't continue to make that mistake over and over. A second chance is fine, but say you're sorry and mean it. And I wish that teams or sports organizations, whoever it is that feels they're going to benefit from this person's, you know, services, would hold the people accountable. Because if you would do that, you'd get a better athlete. You'd get, because they always tell us sports is 90% mental, and then they really aren't backing that up by supporting the mental health or any sort, you know what I mean? They don't support that development of an athlete. The better you know yourself, the better your mental health can be, the better you can be more present and read your options before you throw the ball. Like, it could translate to anything, but it's just like, oh, he made a mistake. Why are you guys still talking about it? It's like, because it still did happen, and he has not said that he's sorry about it yet.
It's also this whole idea of, you know, why are you doing this in sports? I just want to sit on my couch and watch TV. For better or worse, sports is where we have these conversations now. I sometimes wish it wasn't. It would be nice to just talk about basketball. But the truth is, when I was in the bubble, because the players walked out when there was a shooting in Wisconsin and the Milwaukee Bucks players, it wasn't some big planned thing. It was the guys in the locker room were just like, this happened 60 miles from where I live. And I'm thinking about my son out there, or if you were Sterling Brown, a player who himself was like beaten up and tased by police for parking yeah. in the wrong parking space. And by the way, yeah, he totally parked in the wrong parking space. Guess what? We don't throw someone on the ground and tase them for it usually. Yeah. Anyway.
That connection always seems to be missing of like, well, yeah. he did this bad thing. It's like, yes, like, guess what? We don't execute
we
people
don't
when they do
execute
that.
Execute people for
it's
that.
Not how it works. Not how it's supposed to work.
Right. So anyway, that they literally in the locker room just looked at each other and like, I can't go out there. I can't go out and be someone's like, you know, dancing entertainment for the night. I just can't. I can't do it. And because of that, we had a lot of hard conversations that as a country, we were needing to have and were having in other spaces anyway, but really they came together in sports. They came together in sports, frankly, before George Floyd with Colin Kaepernick. They came together in sports when we talk about violence against women and some of the stuff we were just talking about. When we talk about gay rights, you know, I went on TV a lot the year that the NBA was supposed to have the All-Star game initially in Charlotte. Mm. And in Charlotte, they passed a law that, you know, some of the people who were trying to kind of make it more palatable for a more conservative demographic kept calling it a bathroom law, but it wasn't a bathroom law. It was about saying that people in North Carolina had the right to refuse service in hotels and restaurants to people who are gay. That's lunch counters. That's just not okay. We can't do that in this country. You can't hold the All-Star game in a state that does that, when at the time the COO of the Golden State Warriors was an openly gay man and they were the giant dynasty in sports. And you're going to tell him, come to the All-Star game to see Klay Thompson and Steph Curry play. I hope they let you check into the hotel. You are gay. Like, I mean, you can't do that. So that is where we had that conversation on our basketball show. And it would be nice if there were other parts of society we could have these conversations, but we don't all watch the same movies anymore. We sure as hell don't watch the same TV shows anymore. Not everybody goes to church on Sunday. Like there's just so many places where we can't have so many of the conversations we used to have about life in America. And frankly, sports is the only place where everyone still comes into the tent and sits down in the seats next to each other and watches. And because of that, this is where we have to have this. And that's just how it is.
It also feels to me like, yeah, I would love to stop having to have these conversations too, but I would love to stop because we've worked on fixing it, not because we don't feel like talking
we're tired
about
of it.
Because like I've been sitting here watching, like, you know, at, growing up as a woman, there were musicians.
How was that for you growing up as a woman?
Oh, man, it was something. It was especially because I was a woman that had a very short haircut, so people didn't often know right away. And so it was very confusing for me, but it also led to me kind of being inward and understanding myself a little better.
I hope you had a father who had a daughter that could
As a father of a daughter, my dad is very proud, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway. And could never be on the wrong side of an issue because
he has a daughter. Yeah.
But growing up, like I remember hearing bad, like men about men who treated women badly that were musicians, that were athletes, and being told to like shut up about it. And just because if I don't like this music, then I'm not going to be cool.
Yeah.
And feeling like, okay, I'll like it, but I'm not going to love it. Like watching late night hosts interview female guests and ask them questions that I knew was not okay. That made me uncomfortable, but being like, everybody loves this late night host. And if I want to do this with my life, well, then I have to love this late night host. But there was always that little grain of me that was like, I knew I didn't like that person for a reason. And now it's like, I was silent for all that time. And now people are telling me, stop bringing this into sports. And I'm like, motherfucker, it's been in sports. I can't take off my ladiness when I sit down to watch a sport. So I'd like to be able to enjoy this sport too. Who says that you get to be the only one who watches it just because you wished you could have played it for a living? Sorry for telling it like it is. But all the people that are yelling at me are people who thought they were going to make it to the league and just want to hear. But, and I get it. And look, there, we have multiple 24-hour sports networks now. There is plenty of room for all different types of coverage. There are going to be shows that stick to X's and O's. There's going to be shows that discuss the cultural impact of things that happen in sports. That makes sense to me, but it's been so weird to see the pushback and then this weird reluctant acceptance of the crossover of culture and sports when it's not cute and convenient and references to The Wire, but is instead like, no, literally cult, like humans, humanity and sports, because humans make up the people who do the sports. We do have to talk about the human aspect of it. And people are just like, yeah, I don't think that's going to go for me. It's like, why? Go watch the other shows then. Don't watch the show, but don't tweet about canceling it. Was that easier at CNN? Is that just me being dumb to think that at CNN they'd be like, the news is the most important thing?
No. So you know, my job, I was working for like the Turner company as an umbrella. So I would 2 days a week be at TNT covering basketball, being, you know, sideline reporter or hosting some stuff at TNT. I worked on their baseball broadcasts. And then the other days a week I would be at CNN, and we had a show there, Unguarded. That was our sports show that we founded and was really fun to like be on the ground floor of launching a show and kind of help me. I think when we launched The Jump, sort of, I was able to hone what I wanted to do more and like my pitch and all of that stuff. But the CNN side, that's what that's all they wanted. They wanted the society kind of impact on sports because they weren't a hardcore sports audience. So they wanted more of the stuff around the game. And it was great for me because I, again, had come from a background where prior to ESPN, I had worked for the Washington Post. And one of my jobs at the Washington Post at one point, I had 18 jobs when I was there for almost a decade, was to write stories for A1 of the newspaper that would kind of go toward a larger audience being like, hey, this is why this World Series is interesting to you who are not a diehard sports banner.
Yeah.
Especially once Michael Jordan came to play for the Wizards, which happened while I worked there. It was sort of like, okay, people who know that you should be paying attention to basketball because Michael Jordan now plays in your city. Let me kind of do a not as X's and O's version of what happened in this game.
Yeah.
So that kind of prepped me to have these conversations at CNN. And then that prepped me to have these conversations when they come up on The Jump. And by the way, sometimes on The Jump, we talk about basketball a lot, every day, yeah, all day, for weeks and weeks
too
at
much,
a time without ever talking about
sometimes.
Anything
if
else.
You guys could talk about it less would be fine by me, but just that's fine. Just me personally, one viewer.
There you go. There you go. I have to talk to you less because I just got the wave from someone in my household being like, are you
Oh,
ever
shoot. Yeah, I've been keeping you for too long.
No, you haven't. You've been keeping me for just the right amount of time.
I have 7,000 other things I want to ask you, but we'll have to do it again another time. Thank
you. Well, it means
you
you'll have
much.
To have me on again.
I mean, if you'll do it, Rachel, I'd have you on every day.
Yeah,
I just hate texting
you.
I always feel like I'm bugging you because you're so
you know crazy. That you're not. You know
you're
that you're
doing
not.
You're just thank you for being so good and also mm-hmm. so good at you know sharing yourself with people. Mm-hmm. It's so helpful to me to have you as a person that I can be like, let me talk to Rachel. She'll help mm-hmm. me figure out
yeah.
a right thing. So thank you.
I'm here, my friend.
Wonderful. I adore you. You do such a great job. Everybody should watch The Jump. Is The Jump a podcast that they can download?
The Jump. Yes. The Jump has a daily podcast that is the podcast version of our show, which I know is not as cool as like an original podcast.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I get
but
it.
Still,
I know it's a simulcast.
Yes. Podcasts are definitely the coolest, and having one makes me cooler than you that
I
they won't put this on TV. So as
I
long
get
as
it.
We all know that I'm doing the harder, cooler job.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Rachel, thank you so much.
From
Send
your
my
bed
love
with
to your
a giant
family.
Microphone. I will.
That's right.
I'll talk to you soon.
You're
I love
best.
You. Goodbye.
Love you
Goodbye,
too.
Travis.
Bye.
I just met you, but you know, I like you too. I don't love you like I love Katie, but I do like you.
She's so easy to talk to. Maybe we should just keep rolling on this and throw to the end of the episode because this is a very normal reaction. What?
The Fournier, do not Google it.
Did you Google it? She specifically said
no,
don't do
I've
it.
Been, no, I've been aware of this.
Yeah, so I saw like somebody say something vaguely like this a long time ago and forgot to ever follow up on it. So her telling me is just going to make me want to Google it
no,
more.
No.
But I'm going to just stick with it. I assume it's going to be something to do with like a penis.
Katie.
Is it a penis?
If you just listen to me for just listen one time, take my word for it.
So wait, sorry. For the record, I only ever have to listen to you.
If
this
you
one
never
time,
listen
ever
to
again.
Me ever again.
Okay. Or have ever listened to you prior, but go ahead.
This should be just the one time.
Okay.
That's it.
Don't Google it. But can you confirm or deny the involvement of like a genitalia?
I'm not going to say anything. Just don't do it, people. Just,
okay. All
if
right.
You, this one time, listen to me.
Okay. I don't, but you've done, here's the thing. You're asking for people to trust you. And what have you done to build that trust?
Rachel also said, don't do it.
Okay. That's it. That's your best argument you've ever made in your entire career. Should I do the ad read now or will we have done it already? I'm just going to do it now. Flame Bearers, it's a podcast and it champions the women seeking to compete in the 2021 Tokyo Summer Olympics and Paralympics. And Flame Bearers is part sponsor of this podcast, so you should go listen to it. It shares their incredible, often unheard stories as they light the way for women around the world, celebrate women athletes who don't receive the media attention they deserve. It's problematic, and you know it is, because as Rachel just said to you, representation matters. She grew up thinking that a woman covering an NFL team was absolutely normal, and that's what the goal is for enough kids to not know that this was once difficult for certain people to do. A lack of representation makes it near impossible for younger girls to see their future selves in someone who doesn't exist today. I know that's a hard thing to like understand if you don't relate to it, but it's a great demonstration of empathy if you can understand somebody else doesn't get to look at any job, see themselves and go, oh, I can do what that person's doing. So that's what Flame Bearers is all about. One of the episodes features Becky Sauerbrunn. She's of the U.S. Women's National Team, soccer team. She's wonderful. I love her. I've met her personally. Not close enough that I can ask her to do this podcast, but I will say she's very smart. She's very interesting and certainly has a perspective that's worth listening to. She's an Olympic gold medalist. Becky shares her life-changing experiences and the latest in her team's fight for equal pay. We all need hope and inspiration now more than ever. More of those yoga words Rachel was talking. I almost just called her Nichols. I've never called her Nichols in my life. That Nichols over there was talking about. Learn lessons in grit and ambition from these elite athletes, as I like to say, who happen to be female. So listen to Flame Bears on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening to this podcast or wherever you're listening to your other podcasts. I don't know. Maybe you keep things separate. I don't know your life. Maybe you listen to your business on one platform and you listen to your fun on another. I don't judge you. If there's one message this podcast, I hope, has gotten through to you folks, it's I don't judge you. I'm not here to judge you. I also hope I'm not here to be judged, but I know it's going to happen. Trav, can we air out a beef real quick before we end the podcast?
Sure.
You jumped into the subreddit the other day, noticed you've been doing that a lot, and you threw me under the bus. Wait. Somebody said Travis deserved more of a laugh for some joke that you made that I read and didn't remember happening.
Oh, the so Mortal Kombat.
It's possible I didn't hear it. Oh, I did hear it and I didn't understand it.
It's happened a couple times.
Because Travis, to be honest, you're very dry and I never know when you're joking or when you're being serious.
It's part of my
mystique is the word you're looking for. But you threw me under the bus. You said if it feels good to have somebody understand me. Does it feel bad to be
it felt good to have someone appreciate the joke.
Okay. I appreciate
you. Because also, here's the other thing. I then started to second guess if I made the wrong reference to
what was it a reference to?
Because Mortal Kombat, Myrtle.
Yeah.
And then I said, you yell, get over here.
Yeah.
And then you were like, Dan does the finisher. And I'm like, nobody got it. So I'm like, wait,
let's get over here. What is it?
And I'm like, did I mess up the get over here part? And I didn't. Just you.
What is it?
In Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, but I just had said I don't play the game and it's not for me. So obviously a reference wasn't going to
And then I'm like, did Christina and Katie just don't like me?
Travis, we love you. I just don't like Mortal Kombat. I'm sorry I left you out to dry.
But you know what? My people.
Your people.
My notes.
Well, one guy.
I love
one person.
Hey, listen.
One person.
Listen.
I will just say the thing I've started to notice myself become really sensitive to is when someone says, Katie missed this, because I'm like, excuse me, I listen harder than anyone I've ever met. Travis has had moments where I make a point and Travis makes the opposite point that I just made. And I'm like, Travis, I just said that.
There's a lot of times where I will
say you stop something. Listening.
Yeah. So to your defense, there's a lot going on, especially people don't see the video part of that. And there is a lot. So
I'm doing is listening. So when someone tells me I didn't hear something, I take it personally.
No, nobody listens more intently than you between the three of us.
Which is annoying, I bet.
I've tweeted during the podcast. Christina sent emails out during the podcast.
Yeah, Katie, they text. Podcast. My phone is off. Well, it's not off. I'm not going to lie. It's next to me, but I don't look at it.
It is off because I sent you a text during this interview to help you out and you didn't get it.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Let's see what it is. It was an hour ago.
October 17th, 2015.
What was that?
Rachel Nichols interview.
Travis, that was so nice and helpful of you, but I can't. If I look at my phone, I'll lose my train of thought. I'll start playing a
game. That's a good interview of you to not see your phone.
Yeah, I just love talking to Rachel Nichols, and I hope everybody understands why.
I think she's my new favorite.
She's really remarkable. She's really remarkable. She's the thing I wanted to ask her about that I'm going to have to ask her about next time. It was something she brought up in our last interview, which is that she used to say, again, I told you, I've been quoting this interview for years. She used to say that, I was like, how do you not let your Twitter mentions affect your life? How do you not let that take over everything you do? And she was like, look, when I leave work and I come home, I close a door. And when that door is closed, the only way you can get into my home is I invite you in. She was like, so I'm not going to invite in a bunch of people who are yelling at me. That would upset me. I know that it would upset me. So I won't invite them into my house. And I was like, that makes so much logical sense. And yet, here I am scrolling through Twitter, inviting a whole bunch of strangers into my home. But I wanted to know if that if she still has that approach, because I know my approach to social media has evolved over the years.
I've never talked to her, met her, anything. And suddenly I feel like we could be friends.
Man, it is an honor. I don't know what I did to make her be so nice to me, but she has always been so kind to me. And one of the things I've missed the most in this pandemic, other than literally everything, is running into people that you run into at things. Sports has all these little events throughout the year where we all kind of see each other and it's like, oh, hey, whether it's the Super Bowl or like All-Star Week or All-Star Weekend. But with Rachel's always the one that I'll see. And then we both get a bottle of wine and just sit for a long time. And by a bottle, I mean, you know, a bottle.
Is it before 5 p.m. or after 5 p.m.?
It's later usually. But like, she's just a great hang. She's a great person to like sit and hang out with. And she'll tell you if she thinks you did something dumb, but she'll be nice about it. And she'll tell you if she thinks somebody else did something dumb, and then neither of you have to be all that nice about it. She's great. I love her. I'm so grateful for her. And I also next time want to talk to her about how she is with younger women. I think she's very uplifting in a career that most, you know, not everybody is. And I want to know why she's like that, but I guess we'll do it later.
Nichols.
Because she's a, what did you say? Team Nichols?
Team Nichols.
She also gave me great advice on children that I, being 34, should probably check back in with her. So yeah, that's a nice tease for the next time we have Rachel Nichols, Travis's new best friend, back. Yeah,
we're besties.
We love her. We support her. She's somebody that I think that you guys should, you know about, whether you like basketball or not. She's very, very smart. And she's great. She's a good resource. So boom, now Rachel Nichols, you guys know her a little bit better, I hope. That is it for this week's second edition of Sports. Shout out to Flame Bears, that podcast I told you you should listen to. But you know, and this is out of respect, I don't listen to it before you listen to the recent episode of Sports. I don't think
listen to this podcast twice before.
Well, see, I was going to ask you that. I was going to say, should we tell them they can listen to this one once, then go listen to Flame Bears as an official podcast sponsor of this podcast, and then go listen for the second time to Sports?
I'm going
to
hear, I think this is what's probably best. Listen to this podcast.
Okay.
Then see when the jump is on, depending on your time zone.
Oh, good.
And then if you have time, check out Flame Bears and then go to jump and then come back to us for a second listen.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. So two things from Travis you should listen to. That, and then don't Google whatever it is we're not supposed to Google. And the best way to get people not to Google it, folks, is to not repeat what it is. So that's what you saw me do just then, which is smart. If we want to get Bo to come on this podcast, we need to support his podcast first. That is, again, Travis, you're very wise today. We've stated this before, an ultimate goal. And you know, as dreams go on, they do get bigger. So I don't want to make Bomani my ultimate goal, but I think I'm getting closer to it. But we've said Bomani is a goal for this podcast. Interviewing Bomani and getting Bomani to open up on this podcast is a dream of mine. We're, like I said, we're getting close. We're not there yet. Also, as a reminder, be chill. Don't tell him any of this. This is a safe space where we don't tell Bomani any of this stuff, because then he'll say no. Because
we can't let him know this.
Yeah, yeah, he can't. This, you guys are in on a secret, which is a cool thing, right? Feels cool to be in on a secret. So shh. But he's a goal, and in order for us to achieve that goal, I'm going to need something from you, and that's that we got to support his podcast. I saw right after, it was either after or before, but I did notice when we interviewed Elle, I think he had Elle on, and I saw a lot of people saying she was awesome on there. So if you need an entry point, you should listen to that. I know him and Dom do a lot of cool stuff on Foxworth Fridays. They do
Friday pod, those two.
I'm trying to give you points of entry. Bo is very smart. It's why I'm so scared to have him on here. Again, safe space. Don't tell him I said that. And so go listen to his podcast, because then maybe he'll start to notice that, like, oh, people that like me also like Katie, which means Katie's worth, you know, we should go. So go check his podcast out. And if you're so inclined, you should leave a review. And if in that review you want to casually and coolly mention something to do with me or this podcast, Travis even, then do that. But don't make it obvious, guys. Be like, chill.
Like, what's up? Katie said.
Yeah, like, sup, Katie told me I should listen to this podcast, and she was super right, like she always is on her podcast. Would be cool if you went on. No, that's too thirsty. See, that's already too thirsty. Don't do as I say, not as I do.
Just a simple, what's up?
While we're on the topic of what to say during reviews, I saw somebody on the Reddit say that we needed to leave 10 five-star reviews of Travis's selfie in order to get a Travis selfie. And I just want to clear this up. Please do not mention Travis's selfie in your review of the podcast. Travis will probably like that. But the review of the podcast will mean so much less. It will almost be worthless if you write, I'm only giving this 5 stars so Travis will post a selfie. Because then when new people who don't listen to the podcast and or Bomani Jones go and look at the reviews of our podcast, and they're all about Travis taking a selfie, he's going to think that we're trivial, that we're flippant, that we aren't as deep and introspective as we are. And
that's
so
a good point too.
We need the stars, but we do not need a
hairline. He doesn't have a hairline. Like, I mean, he might get jealous and not want to come on.
Jesus Christ. I beg of you, Travis, to keep this same energy when Bo comes on this podcast, because you're going to shrivel up into a corn cob out of fear as soon as he's like, I heard
Bring
you
it.
Said my
I'm
hairline
I'm not scared
sucks.
Of Bo. The thing
Oy
is, will Bo,
they,
will Bo come on the podcast, though? That's the question.
I am terrified of Bomani Jones, and I think that's exactly why he'll come on the podcast, because he will love for it to become his podcast. Whew, I learned that the hard way when I invited Stephen A. on my late night show, and boom, it's his now. And he deserves it. He honestly deserves it. I take it. Take the podcast, Bo. You can have it. But while it's mine, you got to listen to it twice. And I'd love if you left a nice review that didn't have anything to do with Travis's face. If you want to leave a 5-star review, we used to say this back in the old days of sports. We haven't said it in a while. You only have to click that 5th star. You only have to click the one at the end. Same thing if you want to give it 1 star, start on the right. Click the 1st star on the right, and that 1-star review will be logged in perfectly and reflected as
such.
What
if they don't know their lefts from their rights?
Well, then that's a problem. I can't solve everybody's everything, Travis. All I can say is if you want to leave a 1-star review, I totally support you. Click the 1 star furthest to the right. You could always do that. I have been talking about reviews and then tried to segue into a review. I was doing really well this whole podcast. That was my first real running into a wall moment. So I'm going to let myself have that. Leave us a review like this one from Rockert.
We really need to work with the people leaving the reviews. Work on your name.
Well, I think usernames are tough. People don't talk enough about how hard it is to pick a name to represent you everywhere going forward.
We've had someone leave a review as the Detroit Lions in December 30th.
Yeah, December 30th is a weird choice. But either way, Rockert, and it's never something that rolls off the tongue. It's not like Robert. It's Rockert. Have you ever seen a C next to a G? How often does that happen? Equire? Nope, that's a C next to a Q.
Only on this podcast.
I'm going to Google times that C's and G's happen back, and then I'm never going to remember to tell you guys. Anyway, the review says, Katie, you are great at this. There's stars around the word great and stars around the word this. I love the interview pods as much as the Tuesday ones, and Tuesdays seem to be finding their groove. Love you, mean it. That's an awesome review. I'll take that. We do seem to be finding our groove on Tuesdays. Although I am going to make one of you, I'm going to task one of you with the difficult task of Googling stuff while we're talking about it, because I feel like I can't multitask and I've been doing it.
Skills we've noticed this week.
They fall off. They taper off when I'm Googling. Maybe we'll see if Christina wants to be the Google queen.
I get yelled at when I'm on my phone.
The thing is if you're on the phone for something pertaining to the podcast, that's fine by me. And as long as I have one of you listening, I feel fine. But when I'm talking to nobody, I'm like, I think we can
joint research.
All right, we'll figure it out.
The union will research.
Yeah. Maybe discuss it with the union, warm the union to the idea. And then pre Tuesday's pod, we'll discuss. Don't forget, guys, you can always leave up a voicemail. The number is 860-506-5571. Say goodbye, Travis.
Goodbye, people.
Oh, did I say thank you to Rachel Nichols? I know I raved about her, but I don't think I said officially thank you. So thank you to Rachel, and bye, and I love you, and also I mean it.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.